You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I remember walking round the court square sidewalks, looking in the windows, things I couldn't want. There's Johnson's Hardware and Morgan's Jewelry and the old Lee King's Apothecary. They were the little man, the little man.
10 minutes after nine here on a Friday. Mike Musselman joins me. What's going on?
Hey, I got a question for you.
Okay, go.
What were considered the five most dangerous jobs in the military in World War II?
Most dangerous in all of the military?
Mm-hmm. All services. Number one,
most dangerous job in the United States military. Well, it would have been the Army suffered the most casualties, and they had the Army Air Corps, and they had the they had Army Infantry.
You went the wrong way.
Oh, and the Navy's the Navy's right behind them. So I would say
number one,
United States Army Air Corps over Germany.
What job though?
I would say the guys who got killed the most were the guys in ball turrets.
Ding, ding. Man,
yes?
Zach, if I had a cigar, ball turret gunners.
Yeah, that's like, talk about.
Not only was it dangerous that they were in a glass spherical ball hanging below the aircraft, right? But the place was so tight, they couldn't have their parachute in there with them.
Can we design a bigger ball? Hello?
Because the ball extended and, the oxygen lines would freeze most of the time at the low temperatures that they would be up there. And they were favored as a target because of, the ball turret extend. It retracted when it was landed and it extended down below. And then the guy had to crawl inside this thing and then activate it. And it was actually electric. Hydraulic, whatever, but it would power.
How would they rotate it? Because you see it, tracking. How did they do that?
It's really simple. I mean, it's just an X and Y axis, right? It goes 360 and then it spins.
What spins it? Is it electrically?
The foot pedals. There's 2 foot pedals.
So kind of like a turret, right? But instead of using a joystick, you're using foot pedals to manipulate.
Ooh. Right. So it's crazy, man. Foot pedals and I think part of something on the hand too. But ball turret gunners, very good, man. That was really good. I was like, oh, he's onto it. Number two.
Yes. Oh, the second?
I'll just give you this one. Everyone else in the plane.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, if he goes first, everybody else second. And you know what? Those guys, they got in one of those big box formations. And they just drove. And it's not like you could take evasive action, right? The whole formation might move up or down, but you're in a box of, 30 other aircraft.
You know? Not only did you have to worry about fighters, but the flak, So you'd see the flak, and there was a mathematical equation, So they would start putting box flak. They'd start shooting into a box because they would know the altitude. So you'd have to adjust. So it's a game of, what point you start to climb or descend so the flak gunners don't zero in on you. You know what I mean? Because it takes that time for you to actually get into it. So you'd always see in the movies them firing and then these black pockmarks are happening in front of them and you're like, what are they doing? They have to do that because of the time, the elevation that they're at, they finally fire the shell and by the time it reaches up there. So they always fire in a predetermined box. It was the most effective way. Number three. I didn't know this, but this one is pretty crazy.
Well, if it's crazy, I won't guess it then.
Merchant mariners.
Well, man, that doesn't surprise me. Right?
33 ships per week lost at sea.
33 per week? Come on.
Listen, the military branch that took the worst losses in World War II is barely considered a military branch. The Merchant Marines. The Merchant Marines. Was tasked with moving material from blah, blah, blah. U.S. papers often announced that two merchant marine ships were lost the previous week. The actual losses averaged 33 ships per week.
What are you reading? What kind of propaganda are you reading?
I'm reading off of Paul Zolgus.
Zolgus may...
He's a pretty... Stout, yeah, he doesn't let you go by.
No, he doesn't do propaganda. He made national news here this week.
Yeah,
he's the one that asked the SEAL school, a new SEAL school guy, at a Navy kind of Navy Expo West in San Diego. So they had a panel. Paul was in the audience, and he said, "What steps are you going to take given the number of?" Of cases now that are pending on naval special warfare sailors. And the moderator tried to jump in front of him and say, yo, we didn't come here to ask those kind of questions. Well, we're here to talk about good Navy stuff. But to the Admiral's credit, I can't remember his name. He said, no. We'll talk about it. And he answered Paul's question, saying that there's a report due to me in 90 days, and we are obviously having ethical challenges on the battlefield. And we need to take a look at it, and we'll take whatever corrections or doctors. So,
Paul. Good reporter.
Straight up dude.
He's going places.
Yep. He's been places. Now he does what he wants, right? I mean, now he's he's the news editor now for Task and Purpose. So started out. And,
yeah.
You'll see.
One out of every 26 mariners died in the war, a loss rate of 3.85%. The closest service is the Marine Corps, which lost 3.66% of its force to battle and non-combat deaths. If the Air Force had been a separate service, it would have been likely the only service to suffer like the Mariners did. Merchant Marines.
That's amazing, man. That's a tribute to American industry when you're getting that many ships blown out of the water and you just keep making them and launching them and... Philadelphia Navy Yard.
Number four.
They pump those ships out all the time. Crazy.
Oh, yeah. Number four. Submariners.
I'm looking at a ball turret. Submariners?
Yeah. Submariners. You know, that shit's crazy, too, man. You know, not only did you have to worry about military... You know, fighting fires, diesel fumes catching fire, batteries catching fire, asphyxiation. I mean, all the other shit. You know, any other type of failures or mechanical failures that cause the vessel to sink and then be crushed. USS Squalus.
That stuff is especially when you're getting chased with depth and getting depth charged. That is a below average experience, man. You watch movies about that stuff. You know, probably the most successful movie ever made is Das Boot, right? Where you see the anxiety of those guys, right? And then they go back into They go back into port, and another U-boats have been sunk with their friends on it and stuff like that. And you see them, and then they go back out, you know, and, you know, they're all drunk all the time and the pressure that they're under. So.
And last but not least, and definitely a job that I would never want to do, field telephone layers and radio teams. Because remember, World War II, wire. You know, so you had wiremen. They'd have to. So you'd have a battle going on, and if you couldn't raise them, you had to lay wire. So you get your wire dog up, and he'd have a spool on his back like a backpack, and he'd just run. And then the other guys would with him, and they're kind of doing a little bearing of the line, and then they get to where they're going, and then they splice it, and then connect the field telephone. But you start seeing, like, some of the stuff that you start reading about what these wire guys would do, you know. Oh, and especially if an antenna. I mean, that was number one target, the commander. Number one, the radio operator. You know, once you see that antenna, just unleash on them.
And everybody know. I mean, everybody knows with an American antenna what comes with it.
Yeah. That's and if you could snuff out, you know, command and control is done through the radio.
Yeah. And the big booms come through the radio. If you can get the, if you can blow the radio away, you can isolate them, and you know, then they're just another unit squaring off with you face to face.
Yeah, and so yeah, I read the, I'm on We Are the Mighty. I get it all the time. So it talk. There's another one out there that talked about statistical analysis, determining the 10 best generals of all time. Analyzes the number from 6,619 generals over 30,500 battles.
What's the criteria for success if you were good or bad? How do you evaluate?
First of all, they went through, compiled everybody. For each battle, the general receives a weighted war score, a negative score for a loss. An example, the Battle of Bandura. Okay, so, and then you get a war score. And then after that, there's like a whole litany of how they did this.
That would be hard. Because, I mean, you could lose but still have acquitted yourself, you know.
Oh, no. I mean, right? There's like, right? So you, number 10 is Alexander the Great.
Oh, you're born.
Number 9 is General Zhukov from the, you know, the Russian, yeah. World War II.
World War II.
Frederick the Great, number 8.
Ooh.
Ulysses S. Grant, number 7. I think his guys did that for him. Hannibal.
Number 6. Come on.
Yeah, Hannibal. Khalid al-Walid, the champion of the prophet of Muhammad.
Ooh.
Yeah. When you read that stuff, that's kind of, you know, that's something that it doesn't get publicized a lot, but
yeah.
Khalid Abin al-Awad is the Byzantine Empire about that, you know, pretty crazy.
All right. I haven't read too much
Shingen,
about that. What? Who?
The Japanese guy, Takeda Shingen.
I don't know him.
I've heard him a couple times.
What's he famous for?
This is reign, his total supreme reign in Japan. It's during feudal Japan.
No wonder. Who cares about him?
Yeah.
We don't care about him.
Arthur Wellesley, the first Duke of Wellington.
You don't even like the royalty, so I didn't know why you would mention his name.
I know. Julius Caesar, number 2.
Whoa.
You got to think about what he did. That makes a pretty... Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Caesar did... I mean, you look at the Roman Empire under Caesar's rule. That was pretty crazy, man.
Yeah, they got around the world a little bit, and they did good things around the world until they...
I mean, the Roman... when you look at the Roman influence across the world,
yeah.
It's there.
Yeah, no,
Number 1, Napoleon Bonaparte.
Oh, really? Well,
yeah.
Then probably a good thing that you could talk to him. The greatest general of all time.
Napoleon is the greatest tactical general of all time.
Chesty Polish none of there?
No, I'm sorry.
Damn it.
It has to be a general.
He was a general?
No, well, chosen, he was a colonel.
Colonel. Yeah, he was, you know, he's still regimental commander. Like, I don't, what happened?
Yeah, no.
I thought I got that wrong. Like, wait a minute. Well, he's a regimental commander in the Second World War. What happened? How do you get another regiment at the Chosin? He was the commanding officer of 7th Marine Regiment and on Guadalcanal.
Yeah, that's right. He had 7th Marines.
Yeah, you see it in the movie. I think, right? Isn't that right? He had 7th Marines?
Yeah, he had 7th.
Yeah. So then he gets first.
43 battles, Napoleon. 43 battles.
He had a down pat, man. Even when he was getting his ass kicked, he knew what he was doing. I'm watching a video on a ball turret.
Isn't that crazy, dude?
Yeah. Did guys freeze to death because the oxygen got cut off?
Yeah.
In there?
Yep.
Hmm. Because they're showing this dude trying to get into it, and he's like, he can't even squish himself into it. And then it shows like the twin 50s that are on there. And then it shows the way that you manipulate this turret has like joysticks, right? And there's buttons on top of the joysticks that fire the weapon. So, electrically operated. So very interesting, very confined space. That was the deadliest job in World War II. Wow. Because the plane actually did have to get brought down for there to be shrapnel that went into the ball turret. Email. Mac, what is a ball turret constructed of? Is that fiberglass, Mike? What was it?
Lexan.
What?
I think it's like a Lexan.
What is that? Is that some kind of harder version of fiberglass?
Well, you talk about the glass, right?
Yeah. What is that? What's the material?
Yeah. Did they have Lexan back there?
I don't even know. I don't even know what it is, what you're talking about. Is it some kind of version of glass?
It's like a plexiglass, not fiberglass.
I don't know that I would want a lot of glass around me. How would I?
Well, they did. I know it wasn't kind of what they considered bulletproof. Like, right, sure.
Yeah,
what kind of bullets?
Okay, when you look at this thing, right, I mean, it looks glass, but I mean, what you're looking through, the vision block, is a circle. I mean, how the hell did you see anything?
Yeah.
Now I'm curious. Now I'm curious. You're in that little ball, and you know, people are telling you, you know, you have what? I mean, I remember watching those movies in like 12 o'clock high and things like that, and you're watching them like the waste gunners. You know, they have like 50 cals that are sticking out the exterior of the B-17, and they're all on intercom talking, you know, about where the German aircraft were relative to their own position. And, it's pretty crazy. But again, how do you, I'm tracking them would have been hard with that electric,
Without electric, I think it's impossible. There's no way.
Yeah.
You could hand crank that thing fast enough.
So they're showing it, and it looks like it's electric. It's moving, and now he's and actually what they did is it's not on an aircraft. They built like a wooden deck, and then they just bolted the ball turret to the wooden deck, and so they're hopping in and manipulating it, and so it's kind of interesting to watch and how confined, and I mean how you would get accurate rounds out. I guess to me it would depend on how, you know, good the waste gunners were in telling you so that you could pick up the target early, right, and then track it in that small vision
deflection
block.
Shooting. That's all deflection shooting. You know, that's like the ultimate game of trap and scheme.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk about, explain to people what you mean, because if you've ever shot at drones, oh my God.
You don't shoot the target, you shoot where it's going to be. So it's a timing. So, like a bird flying through the air, you don't shoot at the bird, because if you shoot the bird, you're going to miss. Because your rounds, the bird keeps going forward in motion, your rounds go forward, and then they pass by. So you shoot, you look, calculate how fast it's going. You have an idea of how fast your rounds take to get there. That is where you lead. So you're leading, putting that point, and you fire, and the bird flies into the bullets.
Yeah,
the idea.
Yeah,
that's deflection.
If you've ever done it, it's ridiculous. I mean, you have Marines trying to track the aircraft, and you don't do it the way Mike just described it. And this thing, like, it's a drone, a styrofoam drone, and it's not flying very fast. And it flies, like, right over your head. And you're like, what the hell?
Now, get the experience to be a ball gunner in B-17 is substitute the rifle from the shotgun to a .22 repeater. So use a, you know, a Ruger 10-22 repeater. So you got single bullets. You're shooting that clay pigeon. And then go, pat, 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 pat. Not a shotgun, because they weren't shooting shotguns. They were shooting bullets. So if you want the experience of shooting a ball, you know, what it would be like being a ball gunner, turret, and how hard it would be. Shoot the bird with a .22 or a BB gun. BB gun.
Here's an interesting email. I watched those scenes from World War II in those old movies, And I wonder about this on a regular basis, and I wonder if either of you can answer this. How did they not shoot the adjacent aircraft or ships? Because it doesn't look like there's a whole lot of fire discipline around them.
They had it's simple. The bombers flew in a certain formation, adjusted by elevation, depth, I mean, everything. So everything was off space from each other. Now, did they accidentally? Yeah, every once in a while. But they had clear cut. So when you're in that ball turret or you're in the waist gunner or the tail gunner position, wherever position, you literally had left and right lateral limits. You could not shoot aircraft past this point, because you had to know. But it's simple. You never shot. You could shoot. Let's say you had a B-17 flying next to you, right? You could shoot all the way from your far right all the way up to that B-17. So if that fighter is still at that B-17, you could shoot at it because that B-17 is going forward with you. So by the time your bullets get there, they're passing behind it. You can't shoot in front of that B-17. You could engage that fighter from, let's say, 6 o'clock to tail position all the way up until that fighter is parallel or equal with that weapon system. So, and then if they were behind it or below it, they had such a separation, but by the time that bullet would be fired, the energy that it had, it's just fallen to earth. The craziest thing to think about, and people don't really think about this, some of those B-17 formations, B-24 formations with 1,000 aircraft, right? 1,000, okay? Let's think about this. 1,000 aircraft fighting, 250 cals in tail, 250 cals in the ball, one on each waist, one on the top, two on the top, two in the cheeks, and I think that's it. And then the radio gunner. Oh, no, you got the top. All of that firing, machine guns going off, 50 caliber machine guns going off at, 20,000 feet. 1,000 planes firing. All of those bullets that are missing are going back to Earth. Could you imagine being in a village one day, looking at a bomber formation, seeing the contrails of the fights going on, and then all of a sudden just raining 50 caliber bullets? Those slugs are falling to Earth. That shit's going to kill you. How many, just to see what that would look like even if they fired 1,000 rounds from each aircraft, 1,000 aircrafts flying, and 1,000 rounds on a 50 cal is not that hard to do. All of those bullets, because they didn't hit anything, are going back to Earth in huge volumes. That's what I think about, from the gunner's perspective. Holy shit, there's a B-17 formation over our head. Get inside. That shit's crazy.
Somebody just sent me a link. Hey, Mac, check this out. This is called a combat box. The combat box was a tactical formation used by heavy bombers of the U.S. Army Air Forces during World War II. The combat box was also referred to as a staggered formation. Its defensive purpose was in massing the firepower of the bombers' guns, while offensively it concentrated the release of the bombs on target. Initially, formations were created by keeping with the pre-war Air Corps doctrine that mass bombers could attack and destroy targets in daylight without fighter escorts relying on interlocking fire from their defensive machine guns, almost exclusively the light barrel Browning 50 caliber. However, the use of high altitudes by the United States Army Air Force bombers resulted in factors that demanded a tighter bomb pattern and the combat box continued in use even after the advent of fighter escorts, and especially starting in the spring of 1944 over Europe, with the United States Army Air Force fighters flying far ahead of the combat boxes in air supremacy mode against the Luftwaffe's fighters, largely mitigated the threat of fighter interception. The creation of the concept is credited to Curtis LeMay, the commander of the 305th Bombardment Group in England. However, the 8th Air Force had been experimenting with different tactical formations since its first bombing missions in August of 1942. And so what they show is there's a lead element.
It's in groups of three, right?
There's a high element, a low element, and a low element. So they look, and they're staggered, so they look like a diamond, okay? And then, so everybody can drop bombs, and then there's, in terms of altitude, the lead would be flying, let's just say, in the center, right? There's a high element above it, a low element below that, and then a low element that is back and aft. And so so that's the diamond. A combat box of 12 B-17 squadron developed in October 43. Three such boxes completed a 36-plane group box. So you have three of those boxes put together, and that would have been essentially a regiment of bombers. And that would have been part of the group, I believe, is a division, yes? We call a group a regiment, but I think they called a group a division. I'm not sure. But pretty – the wing box, all right? So this is the wing box, a 54-plane formation, three 18-plane boxes stacked in similar fashion to the group box.
Wow. Yeah, talk about – I mean, that's scary shit when you're flying in combat. And you're that close.
Well,
you know, someone freaking screws up.
Yeah, but you can't deviate, right? I mean, so the lead has to so what this says was the fighters, once they started flying escorted, they would go on and they'd take on the Luftwaffe. So the Luftwaffe fighters were not, you know, the great threat. It was the flak, and that was the job of the lead, had to govern the altitude, right? You could just change on your own, like, oh, shit, Mike, let's go, bank left. You were bus driving at that point, and you were following the lead to the target and hoping that you didn't get your ass blown out of the sky. Yeah, no wonder those guys drank a lot, man. That would not. I mean, you don't have, right? You don't have a whole lot of control over your fate.
No, that's a lot of just pure luck. You know, we don't talk about it much like that, but yeah, that's what it comes down to, man. That's pure luck, dude.
Yeah, we're
so if you look at, there's another, if you want to go and look at firing arcs.
What does that mean? Oh, you mean
you can see
back to the guns?
Yeah, you can see, let me try and.
But you see the same thing in, right, out in the Pacific. When you see kamikazes coming at ships, I mean, it looks like rounds are going everywhere, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't look like there's a whole lot of order to that. And maybe there was.
No, there is.
But when you watch
there actually is.
And again, left and right lateral limits, and we all learn that stuff. But when you watch it, it looks like rounds are going everywhere.
Yeah, it looks like they're spraying and praying.
Yeah. Yeah,
so. I just sent you on Skype. I just dropped that into your. There you can see the actual templates. And that's, I think. So the Germans were really good at trying to figure out where the arcs were at. So it could show you, like, how. For them, it was deflection shooting, too. So the best place that they could attack a B-17 was always from the nose. Head-to-head.
Because that was the only one weapon pointed at you, and you had minimized your own signature, right?
Right. Or if you could come in at a deflection. So if you look at the aircraft, if you're looking at it from the top, and 12 is the nose and 6 is the tail, if you came in at like 2 o'clock high, there's an opening there between like the pilots and the waist gunner, there's a big opening along that wing surface.
So that
takes skill. You're coming in at an arc, angle.
Can the ball
shooting deflection?
Can the ball gunner on top? Can he shoot there? And so it would be like, in theory, the ball gunner that's on top.
He could.
And then the nose gunner, but he's limited in terms of left and right lateral limits, right?
Right.
And so when you say, so the line of the attack would be from 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, so just to the, beyond the right, beyond the limit of the nose gunner.
Yeah, lower.
Right.
So almost, yeah, so you're not real high, you're kind of down, so you're low on the, you know, looking for the top gunner. But then, remember when the B-17G came out, this is the B-17, the early model, the G came out with a chin turret, a ball chin turret. And so that, the G model is the one that had, I think has one of the most. So if you look at B-17G, you'll see the actual chin turret. And that made a big difference.
So that's underneath the nose turret.
That was because the head-ons. You know, the Germans knew that the B-17 was weak up front. And I think that's a remote. No one climbed into that. That was actually a remote fire.
Whoa. That's interesting.
But then when you look at, like, the B-29, you know, the B-29, I don't think it had a manned turret. They were all remote. So no one actually climbed into a turret.
They were
a remote fire.
They were all remote?
Yeah, if you look at, I saw something on a B-29 once.
Describe the turret, describe the guns on the B-17. The B-17 that we're most familiar with is not the G, right? Because when I close my eyes and think of the B-17, I think of nose, one in the roof, one at the waist right below, and then the two side openings, those guys wearing their big fur jackets, and then the tail gunner in the back. So that would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 guns. Describe
The B-29 is the Super Fortress.
Right. Were you talking about the B-24? The B-29 makes its appearance.
No, the B-24. The B-24 is the Mitchell.
Right.
And so the B-29 is, so the guy, if you look at a tail gunner on a B-29, the guns are separated, the position is back further. So he's firing back there, but his station, he's got the kind of same thing, but he's removed from that station. Same thing with the top and the waist.
So they had guns? Okay, so let me...
Like a little shell. It looked like, if you look at it closely... Looking for a good picture to have you.
I saw a B-29. I just saw one at the museum.
So there's a turret just behind the cockpit,
right.
And then further down to the tail, there's another one.
Right.
There's one on the bottom, just in front of the bomb bay, and there's one back at the back.
So there's two. There's two on the bottom.
Two on top, two on the bottom, and then a tail gunner,
and then the side guys too.
The waist gunners.
Yeah, the waist gunner. So they would have had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and then 8 in the nose? Or is there a
2,
nose?
4.
No, there is no
2,
nose.
4, 6, 8, 10, and there was no waist gunners. So
there's no nose gunner in the B-29. That's where the bombardier slash navigators sits.
Right.
But there's a forward, there's guns above, forward, and below.
There's two
forward.
Turrets on top, yeah.
Right.
And there's two turrets on the bottom.
Right. Yeah, that's, I'll tell you what, that's, man, that's helpless, though. I'd rather be on the ground. Yeah, it's odd, right? Yeah, you had a better chance being a grunt than you did.
Oh, yeah, because if, I mean, one goes down, they all go down. I mean, that was a big deal, man. You know Fifi's the only flying B-29 left in the world?
Fifi?
Yeah.
Who's Fifi?
The B-29. Says Fifi on the side.
Oh, wait a minute. I saw B-29, the Enola Gay. Isn't that a B-29?
Doesn't fly. Yeah.
Oh, you mean there's only
the
one flying?
The only flying one left is Fifi, I think.
Where does it
fly? Enola Gay, she's a museum piece. Yeah. So is, what's the second one to drop?
Nobody knows. Who remembers?
Yeah, second, when
who?
You're number two?
Yeah. What?
No one remembers you.
Who? And that's probably not a bad thing for those guys. On this date, in 1898, the U.S. battleship Maine blew up in Havana Harbor, killing 260 crew members and escalating with tension with Spain, which led to the Spanish-American War, even though the Spanish had nothing to do with the explosion. But our media didn't let that get in the way of going to war with Spain.
Yeah.
On this day in, give me the year. Here's an American history question for you. All right. What year was the city of St. Louis established? Okay, so the colonies declare independence in 1776. Okay, they declare independence. What year is the city of St. Louis established?
St. Louis, Missouri?
St. Louis, Missouri. Very good.
Shoot, I'd say 1816.
1764, the city of St. Louis, exactly.
Oh, French fur trappers.
Going up and down the river. Nolens?
Right. Whacking the beaver on the river.
All the way up to St. Paul. On this date in 1564, the Italian astronomer Galileo Galilei, who was instrumental in proving that the world was round. That's right. He was born. On this date in 1933, Franklin Roosevelt escaped an assassination attempt in Miami that claimed the life of the mayor of Chicago, Anton Cermak. So most people aren't familiar with that incident, that there was an attempt on Roosevelt's life in 1933. But
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I read about it. I can't remember what I was reading. I'll tell you what when I read about it. I read about it because there was about in a book about the Civil Rights Movement. And there you have it. On this date in 1989, the Soviet Union announced that its last troops had left Afghanistan after more than 9 years of fighting.
Yeah.
Now, I've got a kind of an adventure question for you. On this date in 2008, business tycoon Steve Fawcett, 63 years old, was declared dead after he'd been missing for 5 months, after a small plane vanished over California's Sierra Nevada mountains. His remains were discovered later that year. What is your feeling about adventuring? Is that something that you would like to do? Would you be okay dying as an adventurer?
Yeah, I'm good with that.
You would be good with that?
Only in certain areas.
Like
Everest, I'd be all about having my body be frozen forever on Everest. I'm down.
So going
sign
up,
me up.
Okay. All right. What kind of adventures were you, like, how about flying planes over, like, the Sierra Nevada? Special, like, plane?
No.
No?
No. No. I would do it in a simulator all day long. Like, I would, if I was that rich,
I'd have,
built with a dimensional full motion simulator, and then I could do that all day long. So I would fix that. That would be easy. I don't need to go do the real thing. I can simulate that.
I don't think we're talking about the same thing. On this day, James Forrestal, American Secretary of War at the time, was born. He is most famous for his quote relative to the Marine Corps saying,
There's no finer service.
No, there will be a Marine Corps for the next 500 years as he watched the flag go up atop Mount Suribachi with I can't remember what ship, but off the eastern beaches of Iwo Jima with Howlin' Mad Smith.
That's my point, though. here's my, like my take on this, how it actually was went down. Because knowing the Marine Corps, we're pretty good at, stretching it, you know, like, rawr. So there's Forrest, he's up there, he's watching it, and he's like, it was probably more like, oh, shit, the Marine Corps is going to be around for the next 500 years.
Can't get rid of these some.
Can't get rid of these guys. And so the Marine Corps takes that as a compliment, right? Which, that's what narcissistic behavior does.
See, I don't even think he said it myself. I think, like,
Alan Smith,
there was a reporter and said, yeah, Forrestal said there'll be a Marine Corps for the next 500 years because of that act. Like, he did? Yeah, he did.
And of course he's not going to deny it, because then he's going to make a turd bag, right?
Then he reads it in the New York Times,
like, the Marine Corps?
The Secretary of War. Oh, no, he was the Secretary of Navy at the time. Secretary of Navy, yeah. James Forrestal, as he braved the elements and watched the invasion from a mile offshore and through the most powerful binoculars the Navy had, was able to see a speck go up atop of Mount Suribachi, turned and said, this means there'll be a Marine Corps for the next one. Yeah, we made the whole thing up. Come on. And then Mike's right. Like,
it was made like, shit. Shit. These guys are going to be around forever.
Damn it. Just when I thought I had them sold to the Army, they do some shit like this. And who is this guy who took this picture? I want his ass.
Yeah, give me Rosenthal.
What's his name? I didn't even know. Like, I just turned this shot. I didn't even know what I did. What? Yeah, it was a complete accident.
So just everybody's boxcar
formation.
Was the plane that dropped the second bomb.
Boxcar was?
Yep. And that's actually at the National National Museum.
Where?
On display at... It's on the picture. Where's the picture? The National Museum of United States Air Force.
Oh, in Wright-Patterson Air Force Base?
I'm pretty sure. It doesn't say wherever the National Museum of the Air Force is at.
Does everybody have a National Museum? The Army is...
Is it Benning?
Well, they're dealing with it. That's where the Infantry Museum was, because the Army had them scattered around. You know, they have to have one. Everybody's got to have their own, right? We can't have an Army one. The engineers got to have theirs at Fort Leonard Wood. Right? The tankers got to have theirs at Fort Knox. Actually, the one at Fort Knox was pretty cool. I saw the map, I think, that Hans Guderian used invading France. Like, his personal map, his son lent to the Armor Museum. It's kind of cool, you know, seeing stuff like that.
Yeah. It's pronounced Hans.
Oh, no, not in America, it's not. Well, I should say this.
Well, if we're doing this. Oh, wait a second. If his son, old lady Lejeune, said, my name is pronounced Lejeune.
If his dad says, but see, if it's just German pronunciation and I'm an American.
Don't be hating on the Germans.
I'm not, but come on, you know.
Germans did a lot more for this country than the French did.
What? The French gave us the Statue of Liberty and French fries. What did the Germans give us?
Palm de Fritz is not...
Der Wiener Schnitzel? Yeah.
They gave us sausages.
Sausages?
Or feta.
No, the Poles did that. Thank you. The Poles the Poles are the sausage king.
They're Zutterkraut and Bratwurst.
Who is the greatest sausage nation?
The Germans.
Well, we're going to find out. Sausage. A sausage is not always a cylindrical blah, 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 blah. In Italy, salami.
Don't even bring the Italians into this.
What is the best sausages? What is the most popular sausage? Who invented sausage? Oh, shit. The Chinese sausage, Lei Shang, which consists of goat and lamb meat, sprinkled with cat and dog meat, is mentioned in I just made that part up. Is mentioned in 589 BC. The Greek poet Homer mentioned a kind of blood sausage in the Odyssey.
See, that's the Brits, man. Them and their blood sausage.
Yeah, but if Homer's talking about it, I don't even know there was Brits. So, yeah, I don't know.
The hamburger Germany. Yeah, Germans
here's
are.
Here's a question for you. What do you think the world's greatest inventions are?
Greatest inventions?
Yeah, the world's greatest inventions of all time.
Number one, soft butter.
Negative. Number one.
Okay.
This is 19 great revolution, great inventions that.
Well, soft butter's got to be in the top five.
It is not. Well, I don't know. I only saw number one.
Have you ever
number
tried
one is
hard cold butter on toast?
Number one, no, it's problematic. Yeah. Trust me, yeah. I know.
Okay, let's, number one.
We'll go backwards from top ten. We'll see how
the
many.
The aeroplane.
No, the wheel.
The telegraph.
The wheel is number one.
I don't think it was invented. I think they just figured that out.
No, it was invented.
It's an accident.
No, you know what? It was an accident. I would think that somebody rolled something on a like a down tree. Hey, come on! And then they went, oh.
And it rolled them over, right? Because they didn't realize that round objects roll. They're downhill from after chopping this thing up.
Number two, the compass.
Huh. Okay.
Number three.
Okay.
Number three, the water wheel, which was the first true engine and was used, right? As it became a grain mill, and that's where you saw water wheels. And you
yeah.
Right. Number four,
okay.
The calendar.
I disagree with that one entirely.
Number five, pozzolana, or ancient concrete. Concrete's a pretty solid deal.
Yeah, but a pozzolana, I mean, was that just a fancy word for saying mud?
No. It was not mud. That's the whole point of the point. The point of the point is this. It wasn't mud.
Dude, I put a small rocket into a freaking Afghan mud wall, and those mud walls are pretty goddamn stout.
Let me just tell you, you could blast the mud walls with some. Let me tell you, the Afghans know how to build some mud walls. You watch guys kind of, yeah.
Yeah. We would. Some of the shit that we blew, it would topple concrete structures. After we got done with it, and the smoke cleared, that mud wall would still be standing. So, yeah, they were doing something right.
It depends what you have in there. Number six, the clock. Why? What was significant about the clock? Let's see how smart you are. This is a test of your IQ. Okay.
So I don't have a good IQ.
We're going to find out if Mike's smart or
dumb. If someone says melted butter is number one.
That means it's close to lunch and they're hungry. That's what that means. Okay, so what's the significance of the clock? If I got ball turret gunner, you should be able to get this.
The significance of the clock?
Yes.
I'm not going to think like this. It's not as obvious of keeping track of time.
No.
It has to do with something with farming, agriculture.
It's beyond that.
It's beyond that?
It's, well, that. No, you're right. It's the business application of now that we can, you know, now that we have clocks, right, then the next thing we can coordinate communications and trains and things like that, which led to greater industrialization and efficiency.
So I don't, and I think there's a whole bunch more than, okay, I get what they're going. Well.
All right. So, printing press, number seven. The first,
yes.
Being able to mass communicate. Number eight, the steam engine. First engine was the paddle wheel, the water wheel. Number two, the steam engine. And that, let me tell you, the steam engine, pretty impressive. Number nine, go ahead.
Okay. Well, you know, the first granary was an animal tied up doing a 360 on two stones.
Got it. So instead of using water, we use an animal staggering around in a circle all day.
Yeah. That's what they're good for.
Yeah. No. And let me tell you, and that was big stuff because that's where you got energy from. That's where you got power from. So that was
right.
That was no small deal. What, hold on. Next one is, we talked about the steam engine.
Wind though? The windmills in Holland are pretty damn old. That capturing wind when they started doing that. I wonder when that came about. Because same thing.
Look that up.
You know, they had a shaft going down.
Right. Instead of harnessing water, they were harnessing wind. Number nine, vaccines. One of the most important inventions of humankind.
I could argue that point. Go ahead.
Oh, you're going to be you and Jenny McCarthy? Number 10.
No, I mean,
just, powered,
we wouldn't have so many people doing stupid stuff.
Oh, there you go. Well, that's your own personal twist. Number 10, the steam-powered train in 1814.
Mm-hmm. But it was using coal.
Correct. So we're polluting?
Yeah, so I don't think that's a good invention.
What year was the clock invented?
BC, somewhere BC. It's like
725 AD.
No.
When was concrete created?
Sundials. They don't look at sundials as clocks?
No, mechanical clocks.
Oh.
When was concrete invented?
300 BC.
27 BC, you were close. When was the calendar invented?
Now, are we talking about, like, so, I mean, we could say 4000 BC.
The Julian calendar and the Gregorian calendar.
Oh, Julian?
45 BC. The water wheel invented in 50 BC. The compass invented in 206 BC.
What?
Yes. That's crazy.
That's crazy.
The wheel invented in 3500 BC. Let's roll. That's the first guy, the first caveman that looked around and said, let's roll, dog.
So, 3500 BC,
yes.
The first invention, the wheel.
The wheel.
And then it took another 3,200 years for them to figure something else out?
Yeah. Yes, the compass came next.
Like I said, so that's why you know the wheel was an accident.
No, totally, you know, an accident.
Let's chop all the branches off. Rolled downhill and killed, you know, Bruce.
And then you and me look at each other and go, what just happened? Like, I don't know. But if I could get some of those, maybe I could get my old lady down the hill every once in a while.
Or get rid of my old lady.
The electric battery was invented in?
1800.
Very good. Very good.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought it was way before that.
The first computer. The first mechanical computer was invented in?
1750.
Ooh, close. 1822. Mm. Yeah. It was called, a mechanical computer was invented by Charles Babbage. The refrigerator.
It was called what?
The refrigerator was invented in 1834.
I disagree with that. The refrigerator has always been there, Mother Nature.
Ooh, okay. Then zero. The telegraph was invented in 1830. Morse code. Steel was invented in 1850. The electric light.
What was the
electric light bulb first? It was
the Bronze Age, the Iron Age.
I don't know. I hated that stuff. I hate memorizing stupid stuff. The Bronze Age, the Iron Age, I don't really care which age it was. Like, the Baroque, and I had to memorize all that I had to take an art history class. I had to take two semesters of art history. Right, and it started like 1:25 at the University of San Diego right after lunch. She'd come in with her two stacks of like trays of slides. The lights would go down.
The round panoramic slide.
Yep. The lights would go down after lunch. old Michael McNamara just cutting logs in art history. That was tough. The light bulb invented is number 16, invented in 1880. The airplane invented in 1903 is number 17. Number 18, transistors, the secret of modern-day computer, number 18. And then, in number 19 is something called the ARPANET, a primitive version of the Internet, was built in 1969. You might be well accustomed to its modern-day version, the Internet. there was no single person who can be credited with the invention of the Internet. It was done by many people. The Internet started out as a project undertaken by the United States Department of Defense called the ARPANET, or the Advanced Research Projects Agency Network. It was invented for sharing data between multiple nodes spaced over long distances. By 1970, Transmission Control Protocol was developed by a scientist by the name of Vinton Cerf that enabled computers to communicate with each other. The Internet, as we know it today, was developed by a computer programmer named Tim Berners-Lee, as he created the World Wide Web, which essentially was a web of information that people can access. How about that?
Well, I would argue that the web was an invention that was good.
That got invented by Al Gore? You would argue that? Whoa.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Al Gore never got the credit he's due. So you never said, like, alcohol. Alcohol was an invention. It's a pretty important invention.
Well, there's a whole other. I mean, you can get another list, right? You notice that the Russians.
Tools?
Have you noticed that the Russians haven't invented shit?
Yeah, they just capitalized on everybody else's.
They
invention.
Steal it. Yeah. Now,
the Chinese did a lot in the early part, but then they stopped doing that, and they're just reverse engineering everything.
Yeah, they started using too much opium. The Chinese gunpowder, right, attributed to the Chinese.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of Chinese, a lot of inventions, Chinese. Back in those days.
I don't know. So it depends on, look, you can get a list, if you don't like it, another list drives by.
Yeah, I guess you can look at, like, there'd be lists on science or human, just different.
Okay, who would we say the greatest inventions of the past 1,000 years by the History Channel? So it just depends on what what float your boat. How about National Geographic's? We'll go before we get done here right now. National Geographic, I think we'd all would say, is a credible resource. 10 inventions that changed the world. Number 1, the printing press. Number 2, the light bulb. Number 3, the airplane. Number 4, the personal computer. Number 5, vaccines. Number 6, automobiles. Number 7, the clock. Number 8, the telephone. Number 9, refrigeration. Number 10, camera. I don't see the wheel there.
Number 10 was what?
Camera.
Huh.
Yeah, I don't like that list.
Yeah, there's some, said, I'm looking at one that has, like, what you talked about, the compass, the printer press. Then it brings up the nail. Without nails, civilizations would surely
come. No, they wouldn't, because we did tongue and groove. Without nails,
or they did
somebody
mud.
Finds another workaround.
They did mud.
Yeah, mud. Yeah, no concrete, mud. And wood. But it's not just mud. It's mud from a certain river. Because what happens is we have a disaster, right? And Shemp's house blows down, Mike's house blows down, my house blows down, and Eddie's house is standing there like Stonewall Jackson. And we all go over like, Eddie, why is your house still standing? Like, it got hit by the same stuff our house did. He said, well, I got the mud for my house out of that creek right there. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the creek had bauxite or some shit in it that we don't understand. So everybody started using Eddie's mud. And then Eddie became a rich guy, had a quarry, and that's how he got rich. And that's how none of the, you couldn't blast down any of the walls because it had good Eddie mud. Eddie mud.
And that is your day in history.
But that's how that shit happened, right? Not by, not by, like, design. Because shit, it's not like Eddie went down to his creek to get his mud and put it under the microscope and said, Abuela, can you look at this and through your microscope and tell me if this is good mud? No, it just worked. And then everybody else copied it. So there you have it. That's how history works. And that's how the wheel was discovered, right? It's like we're trying to get Mike's. You know what I just remembered? There was an incident in Afghanistan where a guy went through a VCP, right? A snap VCP. So like we used to get all these great guys. We'd yoke them up and we'd do snap VCPs at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Boom, everybody throws them down. And you just start checking IDs and it's like, oh, we're looking for you. So anyway, so we're doing this one day, and this dude on a motorcycle with his fat sister on the back, who's sick, he's trying to take her to the hospital in Lash Garga. So the Marines have a VCP up, and he's like driving through it on his motorcycle. Okay, he gets shot in the chest. He gets shot in the chest, but he doesn't ditch the bike. Why? Because his fat sister's on the back. He's able to stop it under control, and he gets off and he lays down. So now we medevac, he and his sister. The sister tests positive for tuberculosis, which is why he was taking her trying to get to Lash Garga, to the Italian hospital in Lash. So she comes to where we were at Dwyer, and they immediately give like new civilian patients a whole series of tests. Bing, she's got tuberculosis. So they put a mask on her, and it's like, hey, we got to get her out of here. How do we get her out of here? Well, we got to fly her. Okay, well, so they wound up flying her to the Italian hospital, Lash Garga. But that guy's always been kind of a hero of mine. You get shot in the chest with your fat sister on the back of the motorcycle, and he didn't ditch the bike. And I don't know. That's the beauty of the wheel. It's a wonderful invention. That's all in that stuff. And I'll tell you one other cool thing about when we'd medevac people. Marines are the coolest guys in the world, and sailors too, because you know you'd see these kids.
Without a doubt, I'll suck at that. I mean,
when you see what they would do, you know. And I remember we brought these two little boys who'd been in a vehicle, and their dad and somebody else were shooting at Marines from the vehicle, not knowing that we didn't know that the kids were in it. Right, the kids ultimately are wounded. They get brought to Dwyer with their uncle. And, you know, in the course of like a day or two, they've got like Varney sunglasses on. They've got like Game Boys to play with, and there's pictures floating around, these poor little guys. And with their uncle, they're giving like the thumbs up, hey, what's up? And the Marines and sailors are playing with them. And very, very cool stuff. Very, very cool stuff. I always thought that was the coolest stuff we did, because when we sent them back, it's like, look, you can talk all the shit you want to talk about the Americans, but they saved my nephews. And they took care of me, and they gave us these sunglasses, and nobody else has done anything like that for us when they've done bad stuff. And I always thought that was kind of a cool thing for us.
All you gave us was soccer balls.
Yeah, or that, or just flipped us off as you drove away after you blew the shit out of our village, to the Russians anyway. So, yeah, I thought that was the most effective thing that we would do, and, you know, medevac them and help them medically. And, you know, and they got to see us in an informal setting. And, I mean, if you can imagine going from, like, mud huts to an American base with an American hospital and, like, what? It's like I got picked up by the USS, the Starship Enterprise, and taken to Voltron. And, literally got shown a world I didn't even know existed. And then you go back to your village, and you're like the entertainment guy. Hey, get Musselman. He went to the hospital. Tell us more about the hospital. Yes. They have water that takes away your waste. What? We've only read about that. Did you use the paper? No, I would never use the paper. It's barbaric. But they do, yes. How was the food?
Hey, I got done with my garage yesterday.
How does it look? We need to see a picture.
Oh, yeah, I'll send you one.
Yeah, I need a panoramic shot so I can make sure I execute the 6-step in troop leading on your garage. Are you satisfied with your garage?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Is it up to
for
standard?
Now? Yeah. Yeah. I have big plans for it though.
Like what? What's the next phase of the garage reconstruction?
This right here. I'm putting it. I'm showing you. This is what my garage will look like soon. I just sent you the picture. On Skype.
Stand by. Skype, Musselman. I still got the B. Why I got? I'm looking at the B-29.
No,
the B-17. Some people say I'm a mean person, but it's not true. I have the heart of a sweet girl in a jar on my desk.
Oh, that's my thing.
Whoa, what's... Oh, holy shit, man. Nah, that's not going to be your garage. That's crazy. That's somebody's, like, show-like place. What is that? It's got the
work. That's what my garage is going to look like.
Explain what we're talking about.
It looks like Enzo Ferrari's garage.
It does. Where when, like, there'd be, like, a drop of oil on the ground, he'd be like, what the matter with you? Why is the oil on the ground? Like,
what's the matter with you?
Enzo, take it easy. You know how your blood pressure is. There's a spot of oil on the garage. What's going on? Get him a pizza. Make him calm down. So
yeah, give him a slice of
pepperoni. Get him a slice of pepperoni, and he'll calm down. Oh, thank God, the pepperoni. I love the pepperoni. But, yeah, it's got, like, industrial drawers that have locks on them, you can tell, and compartments.
So I'm gonna have the cabinets up top. I'm going to have a long shelf that goes over there. The only thing that's going to be different is I have my black, tall, six-foot toolbox, you know, with the three different partitions in it.
You know what I think is important for a garage is that the garage should have an enamel flooring. It's either acrylic.
I do have that.
And let me tell you why. If you do that, then you don't get dirt collecting in that pores and everything get filthy. You can sweep it. You can, and I don't care if it gets really cold and you even have ice in there in the winter that falls off your car in your heated garage. But if you have some kind of enamel flooring, I mean, your garage stays clean. Garage stays clean, and I'm a big fan of enamel flooring. So if you don't have it, you should get it.
Yeah, so that's what my garage is.
When is this going to happen? When can I expect to be operational?
I'm looking at, like, how much of the storage stuff do I need?
Wait, what is need? Since when did need ever drive anything?
Well, I don't want to buy too much, and then and not fit.
Interesting. Buy too much. I didn't think you were bound by that. Because that's a pretty... This garage, enamel floors and, like, these black industrial drawers and cabinets below, composite, it looks like stone countertop. Then we have hardwood backboard for the wall that looks beautiful. Then we have the same kind of matching cabinets above going around the garage as we have below. And then on the ceiling, it is steel girders painted uniformly, blah, 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 blah. It is a pretty pimp.
I sent you another picture. That's more like what it's going to look like.
I like that.
That's more realistic.
I know a guy who does that kind of flooring, too. They're epoxy floors. And he says, hey.
I have that same floor.
You do? Yeah. That's nice. I like those floors. The house I owned in North Dakota had enamel flooring, and it had the walls were finished. I loved that garage.
I didn't.
Anyway, we heated it in the winter, and it could get messy. And so I even put down a little carpet in it in the winter. Just so that all the dirt and all the ice that fell off and all the shit that comes in that ice, there'd be some protection of the floor, and then I'd pull the carpet out, and then I'd rinse it off, and I'd put it back in there. But I'll
send you pictures today of what I did to my garage to clean it up, to organize it. Like I said, I spent...
I feel responsible, and I feel like I should be the inspecting officer.
Okay.
All right. Any plans for the weekend? Any big plans for the weekend?
I think we're going down to... We're not talking on... Oh, we have to talk on Monday. Monday's a holiday.
Is it?
Yeah, President's Day weekend.
No, come on. That's only for... Are you a federal worker?
No, I'm not.
Okay, thank you.
We're going to be down...
That's a regional holiday. I just saw that on my calendar because I was messing with my calendar at 3 in the morning. Yeah, I didn't know.
Yeah,
I thought it was a federal holiday, but it's not a federal holiday, or is it?
I think so. So I think banks are closed, aren't they, Monday?
Well, it's not a federal... President's Day. I think that's an optional one. Right?
I don't know. I'm not, I don't track that stuff anymore.
observances, right?
Observance. Yeah, what holidays are still observed?
The city of Bozeman, they're closed. City of Santa Clara, Pequot Library. President's Day in the United States, date and time. Who observes President's Day? Well, the military does, because they take everything off, okay? Which means that right now, and across the United States military in CONUS, they're either swooped or preparing to swoop. That's how that works. So, Friday before, President's Day observances. President's Day, federal holiday.
Oh, it is?
Yes, it is a federal, except in Delaware, Georgia. How could it be a federal holiday except in certain states? If it's a federal holiday, the state don't have the right to say, oh, yeah, but it's not a federal holiday in our state.
Yeah, you're working.
Yeah, it is a federal holiday in your state because we say it is. Let's see, Mexico, it's a state. New Mexico, yikes, Mexico.
I was going to say Mexico.
Georgia, Indiana. Hold on, email. Mac, no comment between you and the Gunner about the president's declaration today?
Not yet. I
talked about it in the first hour. Look, to me, Congress has been messing with this. It's not fair to the people on the American side of the border. It's certainly not fair to the people on the Mexican side of the border because we turn those cities into straight-up shitholes that we don't have our border secure.
Crime and everything else, yeah.
Drugs, crime, human trafficking. And if Congress can't get its shit together, then, again, I don't always support the president, but I like this because it gives the presidency some oomph. And to say, I'm not going to play these stupid-ass games because, what, 5 years ago, the Democrats voted $30 million for border security, and now they won't vote anything for it, and we're playing reindeer games? Fuck that. Boom. Yeah, I'm just sick of it. Solve a problem. And when we get that done, when we get the border secured, then we can deal with the Dreamers. You can have a pathway to citizenship. We can deal with their parents. You can stay here legally as long as you're hardworking. If you're a criminal, you're leaving. And then we're going to be done with this shit. And then we're going to get on to bigger issues in this country, okay? Yeah. Boom, done.
And if you want to see, you know, like I said, a lot of people don't live. When you look at Juarez, you know, hell, all of the other border, but Juarez being the biggest one. Juarez is, go live in Juarez for a year and tell me what do you think, being a border town.
Hey, there was a story that came out of Juarez a couple years ago, and they killed a whole bunch of people, drug cartel people, killed a whole bunch of people, put them in plastic furniture in like the median that led to the town square with signs that said, if you touch these bodies, you'll be next. And those bodies sat there for days because nobody would touch them. That's how,
not even the police.
Yeah, that's how screwed up, right? And what they brought in was they brought in the military in masks to take the bodies away. Who runs Juarez? And why is it? Well, it's because the United States is such a porous border that these places are just dens. They're conduits in this horseshit that goes on our border. So, again, I'm not a fan of everything the president does. I like this because maybe this is what breaks the logjam. So he's going to get sued in federal court, right? And so it'll get upheld in the Ninth District, as he said in his little press event. And then it'll go to the Supreme Court. It'll get overturned. The president will get upheld. He does have the authority to declare an emergency on the border because of human trafficking, drugs, and the number of people coming in. And so then maybe that will get Congress off its dead ass and say, you know what? There's a better way for us to do this. Let us get involved. But this bullshit that we've been doing for the last how many years? Come on. And we can't deal with the Dreamers until you secure the border. So I hope the president, the next thing he says, okay, now that I've done this, Dreamers, you're next. And then your parents are after that. Because we're going to be done with this shit. So anyway, not that I feel strongly about it, but that's what I feel. Boom! All right. Any final comments, Mike, for the week? This is
No,
give us a big thought to go into the weekend. Give us something deep. You're a deep guy. Right, give us a deep thought for the weekend.
Shallow.
I know you are. I just said that. But give us something kind of shallow then. Give us a shallow thought for the week.
Oh, man, why do you...
What do you mean? I said say something shallow. You're full of it.
Oh,
Mr. Shallow.
I can't think of anything. You put me on, when you put on the spot.
Say something shallow. Come on, you have shallowness gushing out of you.
No. I just play a shallow person.
Now you want to be deep.
Yeah.
Hey, I'll tell you. Here's something. Andrew McCabe. If you read the 25th Amendment, right, and if that guy's working in the FBI and thinks that the 25th Amendment applied to what he was talking about in the interview with the CBS, that guy's a straight up idiot. That's like me saying, yeah, the First Amendment is about gun control. You know, and let me just tell you, Mac, bottom line, that First Amendment is not about guns or gun control. It's about freedom of speech. What? Who said, when did that happen? Yeah, Andrew McCabe, it has to deal with the incapacitation of the president. Not if you want to remove him because you think the Russians helped him. Well, I mean, seriously, what a stupid ass. So,
yeah.
Anyway, so say something like that. So give us a nugget before we leave. Come on. Come on!
No, I'm literally on to the next thing.
Wait, hold on. I'm getting now emails about you being shot. Hold on, stand by. Tell the gunner. Oh my God! No, I already told him that, and he didn't even get upset. Tell the gunner that Tim and Jeff both prefer the M1911 over all other weapons because of its stopping power.
Who said that?
Kenny and Lynch both said that. I told you that. Are you going TBI? You're going TBI on me, aren't you? What? I didn't know that.
When you make a comment like that, I can't even get down to that level to argue that.
I know. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do.
Yeah.
They're ignorant. Yeah. And I laid it on. If we'd had better ordnance designers, we'd still be shooting the 38 caliber revolver.
You know what? Okay, here's a deep thought. It's right here on my book. It's laying right here.
All right. Give it to us. All right, ready? Hold on. Let me play some deep thought music, okay? So give me 1 second. All right, stand by. Here's the deep thought music. Today, here's your deep thought of the day, brought to you by Michael Christopher Musselman from Granbury, Texas. Take it away, Mike.
When one's roots are deep, there is no reason to fear the wind.
Huh? What does that mean?
What were you talking about? When one's roots are deep, there's no reason to fear the wind. Ooh. Think about it.
That's like saying when one uses Eddie's mud, there's no reason to fear the rain.
That's right.
There you have it. All right. Words of wisdom from Michael Christopher Musselman. Thanks, Gunner.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll talk to you. We got to do some talking this weekend to figure out the whole. But Monday we're going to get together and talk about the special person coming up.
Right.
We got. All right.
I will talk to you. There you have it. The one and only.
Mesa, California, on the All Radio.
That's not supposed to be on. That was supposed to be on. Here's another email. I know you guys try really hard to do quality stuff, but why do I think it's really funny when you guys do stupid shit? I'm not exactly sure, but I'm not sure that I don't like the Mickey Mouse who's angry and the other stupid shit you guys do as much as anything else. Okay! On a Friday! I can't even do it. I have to be inspired to do that. It lurches into my body. That's how the Mickey Mouse that's pissed off. Mickey Mouse with PTSD, that's how that guy gets farther. All right. In case you missed it, This week marks the commemoration of what happened in Florida a year ago when a young man who had worn swastikas to school, brought ammunition to school, brought dead animals to school, right? When he rolled into that same school with a rifle and started killing people. So I would remind you that you owe it to your community to take a look at the security in your own school. The first thing you got to do is look at the measures that Florida has taken since they dealt with that. And you ought to print those out, and you ought to go down and say, hey, do we do any of this? Do we do any of this? And if you listen to Scott Pollock, right? That's his name. Meadows' dad. I want to make sure I say his name right. Andrew Pollock, I'm sorry. Yeah, Meadow Pollock's dad. And we should all be involved in that. That our schools are as safe as our airports and other federal places. So, anyway. If you're just tuning in, you're going to hear the president. You're going to hear me talk about Andrew McCabe and the 25th Amendment a little bit. Honestly, it's head scratching. Maybe he's smarter than the rest of us, but if you read the 25th Amendment, and I saw lawyers talking about it yesterday, they're saying, look, the 25th Amendment doesn't apply to the instant that they were talking about. And he said, look, it's very, the lawyer said this, it's very dismaying that a senior official at the FBI would be citing this because it simply doesn't apply. If they think there was anything nefarious about the election of a president, the appropriate instrument is impeachment. The 25th Amendment doesn't apply. So, which got me to read the 25th Amendment, and which led me to scratch my head even more, like, what the hell is... It's like, honestly, it's true. Like, what in the hell? McCabe? The more that guy runs his jib, the stupider he seems. That was the perfect comeback to Mike's deep thought. It was absolutely the appropriate comeback. Eddie's mud. That's how things got invented. Like, what just happened? Whoa. Anyway, and then you'll hear the president talking about his basis for what he's doing in terms of declaring an emergency. Again, there should be a mechanism by which the log jams can be broken in this country. Log jams that don't serve the American people. And if this is a piece that does that, then so be it. Because let me just tell you, here's a conundrum the Democrats find themselves in, right? The majority of Americans favor securing the southern border, right? A good part of those hate Donald Trump and don't want to see that happen and the quote-unquote wall get built. But if you talk to them about immigration, they will say, well, certainly something has to be done down there. Okay? And then we talk about the rest of it. So if this is part of what breaks that logjam, then I'm all for it, man. I am sick of Congress. That's right. I'm sick of the American Congress. Hold on. Mac, what do you think about the American Congress? That was me retching, okay? They can't get out of their own way. I'm so tired of seeing Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi. I'm so tired of seeing the Republicans get on. Wah, 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 especially the Senate, man. Them and their 60, their administrative rule that they adopted so that the Senate wouldn't be all over the place. Yeah, they adopted it. It wasn't in the Constitution, right? The Founding Fathers weren't good with it, right? It wasn't invented by those people. It was invented by the Senate itself to make sure that everybody had a say, right? So that before we closed, right, that everybody would get a say. That's why it was enacted. Now what is it used for? No legislation moves. So then they would call the question. And people did not vote against calling the question and putting it to a vote. As long as everybody had their say. All right, let's vote on it. Now, guess what? We won't allow it. So there can be no close votes in the Senate unless you use the nuclear option. And what's the nuclear option? It's ignoring the whole cloture rule. Yeah. There you have it. There you have it. So I'm sick of Congress. I'm sick of them not solving the issues that the American people are dealing with. You know, and let me just tell you, I mean, Donald Trump, for all the things I don't like about him, at least he has the courage to take on China. He's called out NATO. NATO's in a better place now because of it. Why couldn't George Bush do that? Why couldn't Barack Obama do that? Why couldn't they go nose to nose with these people and get them to do what they're supposed to do? Right? Oh, we can't piss off China. China has been fleecing the United States, right? During the entire Bush, the younger, the dumb one, right? His entire administration, the Chinese were doing it. Barack Obama, the beautiful one, his entire administration, the Chinese were abusing us. You know, he's too smooth to stand up to him, right? Right, but he scowled at Vladimir Putin for whatever that was worth, right? Really scared Putin away from screwing around in the United States. Whoa. All right. I need to get off the radio. So, have a great weekend. Do something nice for somebody. If you know somebody that's struggling with trauma, right, go to the website. Go to Post-Traumatic Winning. Download the printout, right? The Two Goals and Eight Commandments. Should I shorten that to the 10 Tenets of Post-Traumatic Winning? The 10 Tenets of Post-Traumatic Winning. The 2 and 8? Because it's kind of getting a life as the 2 and 8. The 2 and 8 of Post-Traumatic Winning. Or the 10 Tenets of Post-Traumatic Winning. It sounds a little bit more dramatic, the 10 Tenets. I'll have to give that some thought. If you have some thoughts on that, don't be afraid to share them with me. So don't be afraid to share the 10 tenets or the 2 and 8 with anybody that you know is struggling, because there's a lot of people out there that do, that don't have a mentor to walk them through life with trauma. And you, yes, you can become that. And I say that in all seriousness. And you will make a friend for life. You will change somebody's life forever, and you will do something good. So, and that's a very, very cool thing to do, because I do it all the time now. And I'm the coolest guy that you know. So, and not because I'm inherently cool, although I am. I'm the coolest guy you know because I've somehow or other stumbled into this, and I spread the word, and people hear it, and you get to meet people like Nancy Dunham. If you haven't heard that interview, please listen to it. Nancy lives with cerebral palsy. She's an honorary Marine, made so by her uncle, found out about All Marine Radio and listens to it. And we get to have people like Nancy in our tribe. And they get out there and they do good things. So again, I would encourage you to spread the word. And the other thing I would encourage you is this. The template for when we go around the country and do these things are as follows. We'll do them in the morning and the afternoon. Okay? And then we'll do them in the evening. So we'll do spouse events in the evening. And then on one of the evenings, we'll do a community event. That's right, a community event. And that will partner with the base that hosts us. With local law enforcement and with nonprofits in the community to do something for anybody, right? Anybody who lives with trauma, come and benefit from the wisdom of, you know, our wisdom as Marines. And so we'll do that. And we'll, in that way, we'll get this word out to a wider audience. And so my point to you is, if you're living in a community, right, where the first responders could use this, get in touch with them. Tell them to get in touch with All Marine Radio. Okay. And then when we come to do it for the first responders, we can do it for the community. High school kids can, should, you know, if you're 18 or if you want to come with your parents, you know, you're welcome to come. Because it's a powerful, positive message that transforms people's lives. And I would encourage each and every one of you to become a disciple of post-traumatic winning and preach the gospel. And because, again, there's nothing but good that comes out of it. So with all of that said, have a great weekend. I will be here on Monday. Mike will, too. And hopefully you will, too. So have a great weekend. On a Friday, All Marine Radio, over and out.